Iran's president says the security of Asia must be established by its own countries, adding that foreign interference will only worsen the regional problems. Yemen's Ansar Allah movement blames the Saudi-led coalition for its failure to extend a UN-backed truce, saying the aggressors continue to ignore the rights of Yemenis. Also ahead, North Korea fires a short-range ballistic missile after flying fighter jets near the border with the South, calling it a response to Seoul's provocations. Welcome to World News. We're live from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, our top story this hour, Iran's President Ibrahim Raisi says the security of Asia must be protected by countries in that region. Raisi said interference by external powers in Asia is not the solution to issues in that region and will only add to the problems there. The Iranian president made the comments in Tehran upon his return from Kazakhstan. There he attended the 6th summit of the Conference on Interaction and Confidence Building Measures in Asia, known as SICA. In his address to the summit, Raisi said those states that loot the riches of independent nations in the name of war on terror can never be trustworthy partners. Iran's president urged Asian countries to work together closely to foil the superpowers' plots and ensure stability in their region. Canada has imposed more sanctions against Iran over what it calls human rights violations in that country. The new sanctions target 3 Iranian entities and 17 individuals, including former Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif. The measures ban dealings with the sanctioned people and entities, among other things. Last week, Canada also imposed sanctions on a number of other Iranian individuals and entities, including Press TV. Ottawa has cited alleged rights violations during the recent protests in Iran. Those protests broke out over the September 16 death of young woman Mahsa Amini, but soon turned into riots. Iran has reacted to previous bans by Canada. It referred to crimes against the indigenous people in Canada, saying Ottawa is in no position to question other countries over human rights. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas says he does not trust the U.S. and cannot accept that America is the sole party in resolving a problem. Abbas made the comments in a meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Kazakhstan. There, they attended the Conference on Interaction and Confidence Building Measures in Asia. The Palestinian president said he can only accept America's role in resolving the conflict with Israel within the quartet of international mediators. And that's made up of the U.S. and the United Nations, as well as Russia and the European Union. Abbas said he's completely satisfied with Russia because it stands by justice and international law. He has previously expressed criticism of the U.S. on various occasions over its support for Israel and turning a blind eye to the regime's crimes against the Palestinian people. Author and journalist Arnold August believes Canada follows U.S. policies when it comes to Iran and many other countries.
The Canadian government, over the last few years with regards to many countries, but specifically with regards to, they simply use the U.S. State Department and White House talking points against Iran. So that is the pretext, that is so-called repression of women in Iran. Interesting, coming from a country, Canada, a colonial settler state that is now famous throughout the world for having committed and still commits genocide against the native peoples in our country. They are in a position, a moral position, to judge Iran with regards to the question of human rights. I mean, it is basically a regime change effort pushed forward by the United States, and Canada, unfortunately, as a very close and faithful ally of the United States, is following through on it by adding these sanctions.
The spokesman of Yemen's Ansar Allah movement has blamed the Saudi-led coalition for the failure to extend a UN-backed truce in his country. Mohammed Abdel Salam said the coalition remained stubborn to meet humanitarian demands of the Yemeni people and uphold their rights. He made the comment on his Twitter page. The Ansar Allah spokesman said peace in Yemen is possible if the Saudi-led coalition members put aside their arrogant attitude and prioritize national interests to those of the US and the UK. He said the reopening of the Sana'a International Airport and Al Jadida port in Yemen, or is among Yemen's demands, I should say. The six-month truce expired on the 2nd of this month. Yemen has been devastated by a war that Saudi Arabia and its allies waged in 2015. So amid the ongoing efforts to find a solution to the years-long war on Yemen, a Saudi delegation has arrived in Sana'a to verify the names of the prisoners to be exchanged under a swap deal agreed upon in Amman. Abdul Latif Al-Washali has more in this report from Sana'a.
In order to verify the names of inmates on both sides, a Saudi technical delegation arrived in Sana'a, while another from the Prisoners Affairs Committee of Sana'a entered Riyadh, and the first stage of the swap deal clinched in Amman.
Sana'a always stresses the importance of humanitarian issues, and if there is a progress on humanitarian cases, it will lead to dialogue on political and military cases as well. There could be an extension of the terms and confidence building between the two parties. Sana'a welcomes any progress on humanitarian issues, encourages this visit, and asserts that its military warnings are serious, and moving toward peace is in the interest of Saudi Arabia.
The head of Yemen's National Committee for Prisoners Affairs says the visits have nothing to do with any political talks. However, observers say this mutual visit is the first of its kind since the beginning of the war 7 years ago. Therefore, it is an indication of direct communication between Sana'a and Riyadh.
After nearly 8 years of war, siege, and the growing Yemeni military capabilities and the resilience of Yemenis, today the world realizes that Sana'a represents the Yemeni people. This is why we see international movements and international visits to Sana'a. The visit by the Saudi delegation is not the first of its kind, but there have been unannounced visits previously, and Sana'a welcomes peace endeavors.
Meanwhile, the head of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, Mehdi al-Mashat, held talks with Assistant Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs of the United Nations, Joyce Msuya, in Sana'a. Al-Mashat urged the world body to reject all inhumane measures taken against the Yemeni people.
Following the failure to renew the UN brokered truce and the military parades of the Sana'a government, the international community is making new moves to find a more reliable agreement that satisfies both sides and ends the sufferings of millions of Yemenis. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Palestinian resistance groups and factions in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip have agreed on an Algerian brokered reconciliation initiative aimed at resolving outstanding issues among them. Following a meeting in Algeria, representatives of Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Fatah have accepted and approved the draft statement for Palestinian national peace. The Hamas political leader, Ismail Haniyeh, has welcomed the agreement, saying the talks had a positive atmosphere. The General Secretary of the Palestinian National Initiative, Mustafa al-Barghouti, has talked of a full agreement reached among all Palestinian groups on all issues, including the formation of a national unity government. Apart from hosting the meeting, Algeria has also pledged to follow up on the peace process. The olive harvest season has kicked off in the besieged Gaza Strip amid a crippling Israeli blockade that has battered the coastal territory's agricultural sector. Ashraf Shannon has more details in the following report from Gaza.
The olive harvest season has begun in the Gaza Strip, and farmers are picking olives on their land in order to provide for their families. Palestinian farmers and their families leave their everyday routines in the middle of October and dedicate some of their time to pick the fruits of nearly a year of hard work and special care. The olive harvest season runs until early November. The tiny coastal territory used to have a thriving olive industry, but it has suffered a major setback due to years of Israeli blockade and wars, as well as the systematic destruction of olive trees. The state of Gaza's olive farmers reflects the scope of human rights violations committed by the Israeli regime against thousands of Palestinian farmers. Israel's tight restrictions have been preventing farmers from acquiring badly needed equipment for irrigation and planting.
The situation is very difficult, especially for olive farmers. It takes many years to grow olive trees, and the Israeli blockade has made it extremely difficult for us to get fertilizers and badly needed farming equipment.
The annual olive harvest season is considered a key economic, social, and cultural event for Palestinians. Olive and agriculture in general have been hit hard by the Israeli blockade and war since 2007. Farmers here are struggling to keep this vital sector alive. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Turning elsewhere now, North Korea has test-fired yet another missile amid soaring tensions on the Korean Peninsula. According to a South Korean news agency, Pyongyang launched a short-range ballistic missile into the sea and flew nearly a dozen fighter jets close to the border with the South. The North Korean military, in a statement, has described its latest actions as strong countermeasures to Seoul's provocative artillery fire near the border. It also accuses the South of inciting tension with its reckless action. Pyongyang has carried out several missile tests over the past 2 weeks that were overseen by the country's leader, Kim Jong-un. The North says its tests are necessary in response to joint military drills by the South, the United States, and Japan. Pyongyang considers these war games as a rehearsal for invasion. NATO defense ministers pledged to send advanced weapons to Ukraine until such time as Kiev wins its war against Russia. Peace campaigners say the only way to end the conflict is through diplomatic efforts. Jerome Hughes reports from NATO headquarters in Brussels.
There was no mention of peace talks to end the conflict in Ukraine as NATO defense ministers met in Brussels on Thursday. Spain, one of 30 NATO countries, has pledged to supply Kiev with advanced air defense systems.
This comes on top of what other allies have delivered over the last few days. I thank all allies for their significant contributions, and I urge them to continue to step up.
Ukraine's defense minister, Oleksiy Reznikov, attended the meeting in Brussels. While he's in Belgium, who's running things back in Kiev? It's a question we put to one expert during an online interview.
The Americans, because the Americans said we are offering intelligence information, we are coordinating the flow of weapons, they direct the battlefield, they have satellites under the disposal of their military.
NATO says it has doubled the number of its battle groups in eastern regions of the alliance. More than 30 warships are patrolling the Baltic Sea and North Sea. Critics say this steady build-up in recent years is designed to provoke Russia and keep NATO relevant while pumping trillions into the arms industry. NATO's Article 5 states that an attack on one member of the alliance is an attack on all of its members.
The United States is absolutely committed to its Article 5 commitments, and we are committed to defending every inch of NATO's territory if and when it comes to that.
NATO says Russia's nuclear forces are being closely monitored. The alliance confirms it's going ahead with nuclear war deterrence exercises next week, dubbed Steadfast Noon. The drills will involve nuclear-capable aircraft, but apparently will not include any live bombs. Asked if the timing is bad given heightened tensions, NATO boss Jens Stoltenberg said it would send out the wrong signal if the exercises were suddenly cancelled now. Jerome Hughes, NATO headquarters, Brussels.
Meanwhile, Russia says the goals of its special military operation in Ukraine remain unchanged, but they could be achieved through negotiations. The Kremlin spokesman said, however, that he doesn't see any prospects for talks with the West in the near future. Dmitry Peskov added the West has a very hostile approach towards Russia. On Tuesday, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said Moscow was open to talks with the West, but the United States dismissed the statement as, quote, posturing. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has also ruled out talking to his Russian counterpart after Moscow proclaimed the annexation of four Ukrainian regions last month. Ukrainian forces have recaptured a large swathe of territory in the east and also in the south of the country from Russia in recent weeks. In France, the ongoing refinery workers' strikes over pay disputes have now spread to the country's nuclear power plants, further deepening an energy crunch there. France's electricity trade union says maintenance in five nuclear plants has been delayed further due to industrial action. At least one reactor, workers have reduced the power output to half. The strikes come as the country is trying to restart all its nuclear reactors by this winter to alleviate the energy crisis. France relies on nuclear energy for about 70% of its electricity. That's more than any other country. But it may need to import electricity if it could find a seller. The industrial action, now in its third week, has taken 60% of French oil refining capacity offline. The walkouts have led to the shutdown of six of its seven refineries and resulted in long queues of cars at gas stations across the country. And that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour, but don't go away.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight. While the European Union and the United States are desperately seeking to increase the production of countries that are exporting oil and gas to manage their major energy crisis, OPEC Plus, in the most sensitive situation, and while the energy crisis has bent the back of the bloc's economy, voted to cut 2 million barrels of daily oil production to be a slap to the face of the West. The OPEC Plus decision has angered American officials because this action has failed Washington's efforts to convince oil producers to increase supply in order to reduce oil prices and inflation. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. The Hill reports that the White House on Wednesday, 5th of October, admonished what it called a short-sighted decision by OPEC and its allies to cut oil production by 2 million barrels a day, a move that could lead to a rise in gas prices domestically. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan and top economic advisor Brian Deese issued a statement that took issue with the decision, citing ongoing concerns about the impact of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. Jake Sullivan and Brian Deese said in a joint statement, "At a time when maintaining a global supply of energy is of paramount importance, this decision will have the most negative impact on lower and middle-income countries that are already reeling from elevated energy prices," adding that President Joe Biden was disappointed by the OPEC Plus decision. The White House announced the U.S. Department of Energy will release 10 million barrels from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve next month, and Biden will direct releases of oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve as appropriate to supposedly protect American consumers and promote energy security. Jake Sullivan and Brian Deese noted, "The president is also calling on U.S. energy companies to keep bringing pump prices down by closing the historically large gap between wholesale and retail gas prices so that American consumers are paying less at the pump." The announced cut from OPEC Plus, which includes the 13 OPEC nations and 11 non-member states, including Russia, is roughly equivalent to 2% of global supplies. The move flies in the face of a push by Joe Biden and the White House to get the coalition to avoid a production cut. President Biden, back in July, visited Saudi Arabia to directly appeal to Saudi leaders to increase oil production, despite his administration's frequent criticism of the kingdom's human rights record. After the meeting, Saudi Arabia announced a production increase, but a significantly smaller one than the U.S. had requested. The White House also announced the decision by OPEC Plus to significantly reduce daily oil production is a clear sign that the bloc is siding with Russia amid a growing power rivalry with the West. The British newspaper The Financial Times explains more about the same story. US Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has cried foul over recent decision by the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and Allies, known as OPEC Plus, to lower oil production, saying it will hurt the global economy. Janet Yellen said on Sunday, 9th of October, "I think OPEC's decision is unhelpful and unwise. It's uncertain what impact it will end up having, but certainly it's something that to me did not seem appropriate under the circumstances that we face." Janet Yellen added, "We're very worried about developing countries and the problems that they face." However, independent observers believe the Biden administration is worried that the decision to cut oil production will cause a gas price hike in the United States ahead of November's midterm elections, which Democrats are already set to lose to Republicans. The OPEC move was a large blow to the administration of U.S. President Joe Biden, who visited oil-rich Saudi Arabia last July to appeal to Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. The decision was made as U.S.-led Western nations continue attempts to curb Iran's and Russia's oil trade as part of illegal sanctions, while also grappling with soaring energy prices in the United States. U.S. Representatives Tom Malinowski, a Democrat from New Jersey, Sean Casten, a Democrat from Illinois, and Susan Wild, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, said in a joint statement on Thursday, 6th of October, "Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates' drastic cut in oil production despite President Biden's overtures to both countries in recent months, is a hostile act against the United States and a clear signal that they have chosen to side with Russia in the war against Ukraine. The group introduced a new bill on Wednesday, 5th of October, that aims to end the U.S. military support of Saudi Arabia. Janet Yellen declined to outline any steps American officials would take to counter OPEC Plus's production cut, which threatens to cause an increase in domestic gas prices. Janet Yellen said, "President Biden has been focused for a lot of time on exploring all available options to try to bring oil prices down." Russia's RIA Novosti news agency has more on the same story. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said on Thursday, 6th of October, Washington is considering a number of response options, including against Saudi Arabia, after the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, OPEC, decided to cut oil production by 2 million barrels per day. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken told a press conference in Lima, Peru, after a meeting with the Peruvian Foreign Minister Cesar Landa. Blinken said, "As for the relationship with Saudi Arabia going forward, we're reviewing a number of response options. We're consulting with Congress. We will not do anything that would infringe on our interests. That's first and foremost that will guide us." In 2020, 23 countries, including OPEC members and 10 non-cartel oil producers, reached a deal to voluntarily cut output amid the precipitous drop in oil demand as coronavirus-related shutdowns were taking place worldwide. After the initial agreement to cut production by 9.7 million barrels per day, the deal was repeatedly revised to match market conditions. OPEC Plus reached pre-pandemic production levels in August of 2022. The OPEC Plus move to cut oil production by 2 million barrels per day was made in response to uncertainty in global oil market outlooks, in part caused by Western sanctions against Russia on Russian energy deliveries and the G7 plans to introduce a price cap on Russian crude oil. The decision received backlash from the United States, which demanded an increase in oil production to battle rising domestic prices. House Democrats have introduced a bill to withdraw U.S. air defense systems from Saudi Arabia and also from the United Arab Emirates in retaliation for production cuts by OPEC Plus petroleum cartel, of which both nations are a member. OPEC Secretary General Haitham Al-Raisi said the group's decision to reduce its collective petroleum output by 2 million barrels per day beginning in November was based on bringing security and stability to the energy markets.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear mothers, lovely sisters, and kind sisters, all ladies from all around the world. Welcome to a new episode of Muslim Lady. You are listening to us from IRB English Radio. This is Asma, your humble host, and here I have a dear guest, Sister Zainab. She's going to help us through some interesting stuff for Muslim Lady.
Yes, assalamu alaikum, Asma. Thank you so much for having me. Alhamdulillah.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. I hope I could really get some very good stuff for Muslim Lady.
Yes, I'm pretty much sure of that. As you all know, being a human means that we have to reach a pinnacle, and that highest point is going to be our salvation.
True.
According to the Holy Book of Quran, we have been asked to go through the perfect models.
Yeah.
Actually, what we are going to share in this program is just something that we've been through our studies. And now we're just going to have some kind sharing of this information with the audience.
Definitely.
And of course, you're going to help us with that. This road to salvation is going to have some steps. Now, the perfect models are, of course, the Prophet, peace be upon him and his family.
Definitely.
And, of course, since we're talking about Muslim Lady, it's going to be his daughter.
Yeah.
That is Lady Fatima.
Salaamu alayha.
So, maybe there are some very much easy things that we should not consider as very much drastic, but they still might have some importance in our life, but we're not noticing them. And it starts with eating. So, I would like you to talk upon that fact.
All right. Well, when we consider a Muslim lady and the fact of food eating, it goes back to a female because she is the one who has to start preparing it to the time she serves it, to the time she feeds herself and her family.
Of course, in an Islamic way of life.
Yeah, definitely. Because we're here to discuss today Islamic way of life. And in Islamic way of life, we have individualistic ways and how do you live your social life. And as you rightly mentioned that in a holy book of Quran, in Surah Ahzab, probably that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has mentioned, he has mentioned the name, the Rasul of Allah, the Messenger of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is a good exemplar for you. So definitely in this program today, I'll be giving you examples from him himself and the definitely because he was the teacher of
Sayyidah Fatima.
Sayyidah Fatima Zahra, salam alayha, the direct teacher, the direct practical teachings she saw, and she is the role model of Muslim ladies.
Lady, of course.
So coming back to food, food is, or eating, or whatever, because food is essential for survival. So Prophet Muhammad, may peace be upon him, would make a dua. He would go for a supplication first, and when he would take bread in his hand, he would say, "O Allah, send us blessings with this bread. Do not bring about separation in between us and this bread. For if we don't have it, we won't be able to carry out worship." It's a very, very important message for ladies who are preparing food, who get into the kitchen. The first thing is that, with what intention do you enter the kitchen?
Now, it might sound very much trivial, but it actually has so much of effect.
Why? Because in all our actions, as per Islam, are divided into five categories. It's obligatory, your actions are recommended, your actions are forbidden, or there are some actions which have neutral effect. So there are, you know, these categories. When you have to avoid five things, you are recommended of five things. So as per these jurisprudence rulings, cooking food, or like serving food, or like making food, is a neutral thing. It's a mubah. You don't get any rewards for it. You are not committing any sin while you're actually preparing the food.
Of course,
but
yeah.
When you enter your kitchen with the intention that, "Oh Allah, I'm entering my kitchen to feed my family so that we will be able to carry out worship in a better way," it is something, your neutral thing, the thing that has no reward so far, which was mubah as per the jurisprudence rulings, gets converted into a recommended thing.
Yeah.
You know, we have in so many places in narrations that a believer is intellectual. So an intellectual believer is this. If you are a Muslim lady, you enter kitchen with this intention, "Oh Allah, I'm cooking food for my family so that they get energy to carry out worship." Now coming to the things what they would do. There are certain things that the prophetic family would take care of, especially in terms of eating habits, which was they would make sure the food they are eating is halal.
Mm-hmm.
That does not contain intoxicants, because everything that intoxicates you is haram, is already considered as haram in Islam. So they would
Which is forbidden.
Yeah, which is forbidden. Now there's a lot of things. For example, there are your kids who would like force you to buy the drinks, the soft drinks or the cold drinks. But you know, there are certain people, I have known a lot of people who with these cold drinks feel a little, you know, intoxicated. They get a light off. They don't feel very good. So everything that intoxicates you, every drink rather that intoxicates your body is forbidden for you. So the first thing they would really, really look upon was being halal. That was in terms of food. And then another thing was they would make it as simple as possible.
So now before we get into this point, let's go for a short break and I'll be back. Thank you, dear listeners. Don't go anywhere.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back, ladies, to your program. Well, in here, we're discussing some interesting point from the book that our dear guest is talking about right now. Zainab, shall you please talk a bit about the book that you're discussing?
Well, it was a few years ago I went through this book and it was so interesting. The name of the book is Etiquettes and Lifestyle of Lady Zahra Salamu Alaiha, written by Dr. Muhammad Reza Jabari. And it's really, really interesting book. Mm-hmm. And it becomes more interesting when you see all those things practically in a role model.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I'm discussing all my points from the book. And we're talking about eating etiquettes they had.
Yeah, the first point is eating.
Yeah, the first individualistic way of life is eating habits. And in those eating habits, we discussed that the first thing they would very much stress upon was being halal. The food should have been halal. Then another thing was it should look as simple as possible and avoid the demand of particular or luxurious kinds of foods. Now there's a question. Does that mean Islam is stopping us from eating luxurious foods? No. Islam is telling us don't do that every day.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just eat one kind of food every day. You have just avoid having stress on. Like we have so many kids.
Don't feel the pressure.
Especially it's in our kids. You know, we have kids who are in the dining table and they see something simple. Make them used to simple foods. They are like, why you cook this? I'm not going to eat this.
Yeah,
I'm going to eat some particular thing. So, for example, some people are used to eat meat. And I was doing a research about this, that Islam told you to avoid demanding luxurious kinds of foods every day. There's nutritionist from Stanford University of Medicine, namely Joanne Hatner, who says that eating one type of food leads to organ failure. Imagine.
Uh-huh.
We have been taught this very, very early in our Islamic teachings. Be it simple, have variety. Don't eat one kind of luxurious food. Because even if you're eating meat every day, it will do something with your body that your cells will start eating up your muscles.
Oh.
These are all research done there. And I mentioned the nutritionist. I mentioned the university. You can go back to the internet and search and see how one kind of food leads to organ failure.
Even if it's luxurious or expensive.
Because people try to, you know, go for one kind of food and it's luxurious. It should be luxurious. Because there are some families, some rich families, who would not eat food without having meat. But do you know it will eat up your muscles one day?
Yeah, of course. And eating meat all alone is going to lead to too much of a disease.
Yeah. So coming to next point, the food they stressed upon was healthy foods and hygienic foods.
Mm-hmm.
The cleanliness of the food was very, very important because once the food is clean, you're not going to have diseases.
So aside from being halal, it must be pretty much clean.
Clean and healthy as well, you know, not like you start making all fried kind of things all the time, eating a lot of sugar that like damages your body. So they would definitely take care of healthy and hygienic food.
And the mother is the one who's providing
all that. Exactly. I'm just discussing all these points, especially as a daughter, you have to take care of all of them. As a mother, you have to take care of all of them. And as a wife, you have to take care of all of them. And then
because the women are the center of the family.
Exactly. And women love to be attractive. And another point that I'm going to discuss is that eating when you are hungry and as per your body need, which many people do not do. Mm-hmm. They start eating wherever they find food, whether they are hungry or they are not, whether their body needs or whether their body does not need. But this is not the prophetic way of life, or this is not the way of life of Lady Zahra Salaam Alaiha. They would eat when they would be hungry, and they would only need as per the body needs. Once we start, you know, doing this, once we start eating beyond limits, actually, we damage our body looks, which is not good for a female.
And then you will regret that. And then you have to go through too much of exercise to
change
that.
Well, as Islam is telling you, the better way of life is eat only the moment you're hungry and eat only the amount of food your body needs. Don't go beyond that. Others. But unfortunately, we are so much into social media stuff, we are so much into our mobile phones, we forget that our family is calling us on the dining tables, or we tell them I'm just busy with something. Even if you're busy with some very nonsense stuff, you will tell your family, I'll eat later. Eating later and alone is not Islamic way of life.
We're not recommended.
Eating
to
with
do that.
Others has got different kind of blessings. It has got different kind of, you know, so many things with it that we can't even imagine.
It'll be more pleasurable, actually.
Definitely. Then very, very important is to start and end your eating things with His name. With the name of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In fact, I suggest the mothers listening to us. I suggest the sisters, the daughters, the wives listening to us. Start that not only when you start eating food, start that in the kitchen you enter.
Yeah,
while
from
preparing.
When you are cooking.
When you start with His name, definitely it's going to get some that different spiritual taste in it.
Yeah.
Maybe there was something in the food that was going to damage your body, but with this blessings that you get with His name.
And you know that will get into the flesh of your children and your family.
Exactly. And then you have some spiritual things into the flesh of your children. We have narrations that fire is forbidden for them.
Mm-hmm.
The fire of hell is forbidden for them. So they used to avoid drinking directly from the plate. Do you see sometimes we have these soups and all and we try to eat up directly them from the plate?
Yeah.
No, use spoon or something. Like, try to be humanic. You're not an animal that you go to the plate and you start directly eating with your mouth.
Yeah.
So, and they would avoid blowing directly into the food. For example, what we do sometimes when the food is very, very hot.
Mm-hmm.
So we start blowing up, they would avoid this thing.
And even scientific methods have shown that, it's been proved actually scientifically, that doing that to the food, blowing into the food, is going to make it sort
toxic. Yeah.
So thank you. It was actually so much of information for me and for the audience. We are talking about the Islamic way of life according to Sayyida Fatima, salamullah alayha, and We still have too much of things to talk about, maybe in other episodes. Thank you for staying tuned and thank you for listening to us. I wish you blessings. May Allah shower you with His blessings. Thank you for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. For more information, you can visit parstoday.com. And that's it. Thank you.
I know I'm waiting. Waiting for something to happen.
trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Spread of modern-day slavery. In this special program, we examine the problem of modern-day slavery, which affects tens of millions of people worldwide. Despite the fact that traditional slavery was abolished towards the end of the 19th century, nonetheless, slavery exists today, albeit in a different form, and tens of millions of people are affected by it. Please stay with us for more. But what is modern-day slavery? Trafficking in persons, human trafficking, and modern slavery are used as umbrella terms to refer to both sex trafficking and compelled labor or forced labor. Modern slavery is the severe exploitation of other people for personal or commercial gain. Modern slavery is all around us, but often just out of sight. People can become entrapped making our clothes, serving our food, picking our crops, working in factories, working in houses as cooks or cleaners, etc. From the outside, it can look like a normal job, but people are being controlled. They can face violence or threats or be forced into inescapable debt. But what is the most common form of modern slavery today? The most common form of modern slavery is bonded labour or debt bondage. Debt bondage is a form of forced labour and happens when a person is forced to work to pay off a debt. They are tricked into working for little or no pay at all, with no control over their debt. This is thought to be the most widespread form of modern-day slavery today. Some people are forced to work in mines or farms and receive little or no pay. Statistics show that modern slavery is very prevalent in some countries, with large numbers of people effectively working as slaves. Generally speaking, in countries where there is a lack of legislation, or the legislation has many loopholes and is weak, or where there is widespread corruption, or countries where laws are simply not enforced, we see the problem of modern-day slavery. Generally, the poorer sections of the population or those who are not protected by the laws of the land fall prey to modern-day slavery. Iranian journalist and writer Mohammad Dowlati defines modern slavery as, if a person is forced to work for little or no pay, possibly under very difficult circumstances, and other people benefit from this forced labour, and there is no way that person can escape from this predicament, then that person is a modern-day slave. Another aspect of modern slavery, which is not common knowledge, is that this phenomena has spread to many industrialized and developed countries, as well as developing nations and underdeveloped countries. For example, in Britain, an industrialized nation, there are at least 10,000 individuals who are classified as modern-day slaves. In fact, in virtually all Western nations who claim to champion human rights today, we see the problem of modern slavery in all of its different shapes and forms. One notable example is immigrant workers, mostly from Latin America, who work as seasonal labor in American farms, and in particular in the state of California. These immigrant workers are exploited heavily, receiving very little money for their work, and are often threatened with deportation from the United States. Another notable example is the trafficking of Eastern European women and girls to various countries in Western Europe, working as prostitutes and sex slaves. Sex trafficking from Eastern to Western Europe may also occur through a specific form of coercion, whereby individuals are compelled to continue in prostitution through the use of unlawful debt, purportedly incurred through their transportation, recruitment, or even their sale, which exploiters insist they must pay off before they can be set free. Another form of modern-day slavery is sex trafficking. Forced prostitution is another form of modern-day slavery, which we see most often in Western nations, particularly in Western Europe, North America, Eastern Europe, and Southeast Asia. The latest United Nations report called Global Estimates of Modern Slavery, published by the International Labour Organization, ILO, International Organization for Migration, IOM, and International Human Rights Group, Walk Free, revealed last year some 50 million people were living in modern slavery, 28 million of them in forced labor, and 22 million in forced marriages. According to the International Labor Organization's Director General, Guy Ryder, it is shocking that the situation of modern slavery is not improving. Nothing can justify the persistence of this fundamental abuse of human rights. Compared to 2016 global estimates, 10 million more people were in modern slavery in 2021, with women and children disproportionately vulnerable. According to the United Nations report, modern slavery occurs in almost every country in the world and cuts across ethnic, cultural, and religious lines. And, of course, in industrialized and developed nations, we see this phenomena very clearly. More than half of all forced labor and quarter of all forced marriages can be found in upper middle income or high income countries. 86% of forced labor cases are found in the private sector, with forced commercial sexual exploitation representing 23%, almost 4 out of 5 victims of whom are females. Forced labor is another form of modern-day slavery. Forced labor, sometimes also referred to as labor trafficking, is when a person uses force or physical threats, psychological coercion, abuse of the legal process, deception, or other coercive means to compel someone else to work. Once a person's labor is exploited by such means, the person's prior consent to work for an employer is legally irrelevant. The employer is a trafficker, and the employee is a trafficking victim. Migrants around the world are particularly vulnerable to this form of human trafficking. But individuals also may be forced into labor in their own countries. Female victims of forced or bonded labor, especially women and girls in domestic servitude, are often sexually abused or exploited as well. Another unsavory aspect of modern-day slavery is forced child labor. Although children may legally engage in certain forms of work, children can also be found in slavery or slavery-like situations. Some indicators of forced labor of a child include situations in which the child appears to be in the custody of a non-family member who requires the child to perform work that financially benefits someone outside of the child's family and does not offer the child the option of leaving the work, such as forced begging. Yet another aspect of modern-day slavery is unlawful recruitment and use of child soldiers in wars around the world. Child soldiering is a manifestation of human trafficking when it involves the unlawful recruitment or use of children through the use of force, fraud or coercion by armed forces as combatants or other forms of labour. Perpetrators may be government armed forces, paramilitary organisations or rebel groups around the world. Many children are forcibly abducted to be used as combatants in all sorts of wars and conflicts around the world.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.